Welcome to the conference. Please note today's call is being recorded. Now I'd like to turn the call over to your host, Ms. Lauren Ritchie. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, and depending on where you are. Welcome to the Renal Endorsement Maintenance Steering Committee meeting, where we will be reviewing the vascular access, patient education, and quality of life measures today. We are joined here by Karen Pace from National Quality Forum, as well as myself. We have a full agenda today for 2 hours. We have 6 measures we will try to get through. So we're going to get right into that very quickly. But before I do so, I will turn it over to one of our co-chairs, Dr. Christine Schonder, for any opening remarks.
Hi, everyone. Thank you all for calling in today for the review of these measures. We have a full agenda, so Karen and Lauren will be taking care of introducing each of the measures, and then we'll have some time for comments throughout. That's all.
Okay. Thank you. And just really quickly, I just want to take a really quick poll of the committee members that we do have on the call. So far, I'm showing Andy Narva, Connie Anderson, Jeff Burns, Jerry Jackson. Are there any other renal endorsement maintenance steering committee members on the call?
Yeah, Peter Crooks is here.
Okay. And Peter, I don't see you logged into the webinar. Are you on your way?
Working on it.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, with that, I think we're going to get
right. We also have, of course, Christine Schonder on. And
Rick Casco is on.
Okay.
And are there any other committee members on that we didn't call name or see on the website, on the webinar? Okay.
Okay, with that, I think I'm going to turn it right over to Karen Pace, who will start us off with the vascular access measures. And just a couple of quick notes for the documents that we're going to be showing in the webinar. You might want to maximize your screen in the upper right-hand corner as we show some of the Word documents from the measure submission forms and other documents. And Karen?
All right. So what we sent out prior to the meeting was a summary of the subgroup, the work group's preliminary evaluations. And then, as you know, at the meeting, we actually did start evaluating the patient education measures. And as far as we got with that, we also included that information. One of the things that, so what I'm going to do is kind of walk through the measure description and the preliminary evaluations, and what we will do is highlight any issues or concerns that may have shown up, and ask for the committee members to discuss that. We do have measure developers on the call who are available to respond to any questions that you may want to direct to them. So we'll start with 0256, which is the hemodialysis vascular access, minimizing use of catheters as chronic dialysis access. This measure is the percentage of patients on maintenance hemodialysis during the last dialysis treatment of the study period with a chronic catheter continuously for 90 days or longer prior to that last dialysis session. So the numerator, obviously, are the patients who are using the catheter for 90 days or longer, and the denominator is patients on maintenance hemodialysis that have been identified during that study period. Exclusions are patients on acute hemodialysis, peritoneal dialysis patients, or patients less than 18 years of age. There's no adjustment needed. This is a facility level measure, and it's a measure. The measure steward is CMS. So we'll get on to one of the things, and I already kind of missed the boat on this, but one of the things that we wanted to just kind of stipulate at the beginning is that based on the preliminary evaluations and discussion of similar measures at the steering committee, it appears that there's no question about this being a high-impact aspect of healthcare for these patients. So for these vascular access measures that we're going to be reviewing, we thought we would suspend any discussion of impact, but certainly wanted to give an opportunity for the committee to raise any issues if they think that there are any that should be called out and discussed separately.
I was wondering if, Jerry, you know, looking at the preliminary scores, it was pretty, well, strongly supported by our subcommittee, but Jerry had consistent questions about reliability and testing, and I was wondering, Jerry, if you could comment on that.
Okay, and who was that just spoke?
Andy.
Okay, and could we, that'd be great, and what I'd like to do is just, we'll try to systematically go through these criteria, and we definitely want to address any of the questions that were raised. So if you could hold that for just a second, Andy.
Sure, I apologize for jumping.
No, that's okay. So if we move on with after impact, the next important subcriterion is performance gap. And the preliminary evals generally rated this either high or moderate, but there was a question about the range of performance indicated that there was a prevalence of 5% using catheters, and that that seemed to be lower than the actual experience. So I just wanted to see if there was any discussion about performance gap on this particular measure.
And 5% sounds awfully low.
Right, and if we go to the measure submission form, we ask for data, because this is, and by the way, all of these vascular access measures are up for endorsement maintenance, so we did ask for performance on the measure as it specified, and that data is in 1B2, and it said that data from Crown Web, January 2010, the first quartile was 0%, median was 2%, third quartile 9%, and that the average was 5% of patients.
This may be low, this is Peter Cooks, because of maybe the 90-day requirement. Maybe that explains it.
Would it be fair to say, if I'm interpreting this correctly, that the fact that there are units with as many as 47, tell me if I'm interpreting this correctly, units with as many as 47% of patients that are dialyzing with catheters for more than 90 days?
Where are you seeing that?
The second line in the blue ink under 1B2, distribution is between 0% and 47%.
Oh, so that's the maximum reported is 47%.
So although the mean is 5, if I'm interpreting this correctly, there are a substantial number of units with a much higher percentage of patients with chronic dialysis catheters. So that the mean itself doesn't sound so horrible, but the evidence of a performance gap, I think, is there.
Okay.
If you look at the outliers.
Right.
Am I interpreting that correctly?
Could we ask if the measure developer can shed some light on that?
Yeah, this is Joe Masana. I believe that is correct interpretation here, that we have the extreme facilities have as high as 47% chronic catheter use, to use the term that's associated with that greater 90 days continuous use.
Yeah, then obviously there's an important performance gap here.
Okay. All right. So any further discussion about that or disagreement?
Jerry, I don't disagree. I think if we looked at network data, and I tried to get our network quality director on the phone and couldn't get her a little while ago to confirm this, but I think our greater than 90-day percentage is quite a bit higher, which is, would say that there's more of a performance gap than the application or the developer document is showing. And it may be that the source of the data being a relatively narrow time frame in Crown Web is the issue, and network data would be a longer swath of data. So I agree that there is a performance gap.
Okay, great.
Another point, Peter Crooks, there may be that Crown Web data is on a limited number of facilities at that point in time. So maybe those are better performers or whatever, you know, but I think it's not the full swath of data.
This is Connie. That's absolutely correct. It's a very narrow swath of data for just those facilities that are in the pilot and Crown Web. So I agree that looking at our network data, it reflects a much higher percentage than the 5%.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
This is Joe Masana again. I've got Fistula First data up here, and it looks like there's been a decreasing trend, CVC 90 days by Fistula First, down into the single digits into starting this early in 2010. So although there is a bit of a difference between the Crown Web data and the Fistula First data, the prevalent catheter use I think has been trending downward, and the national data looks like it's in the 8% range based on Fistula First data, which is a more expansive set of facilities.
Okay, so we can go ahead and move on. So under scientific acceptability of measure properties, the first area is reliability. And there was a question about this, and one of the things I want to point out is this is something that kind of crossed the CMS process measures about doing correlations of time periods, and the question was raised about whether that's a demonstration of reliability. In the responses that they sent to questions prior to our in-person meeting, CMS did provide some reliability analysis of the measure score, the precision and the signal-to-noise analysis. And so that is in that supplemental document, the developer responses, and the table with the reliability statistics is on page 25. So on this particular one, minimizing use of catheters 0.256, they have an inter-unit reliability of 0.84. The intra-class correlation was still relatively low, 0.08, but that inter-unit reliability, which is supposed to be an indication of how much of the difference across facilities is true difference versus, you know, random noise. And so that 0.84 is a pretty good number. So I'll stop there, and I think, Andy, you want to Andy's question is relevant here about the preliminary rating about reliability. So Andy, you want to proceed, or Jerry, one of the two?
Well, this is Jerry. Andy addressed it to me, and we had a brief discussion at the meeting about this. I have still some reservations about measuring data across points of time as a measure of reliability, but I understand where they're going with this in a better way now after reviewing that document on page 25. What really sways me more positively towards this measure is the validity testing with the correlation with hospitalizations. I think that adds a lot of strength to the measure. And whereas I had in the preliminary voting had just based on our direction of scientific reliability, looking at this very, very closely. I had reservations before, but this additional information provided by the developer causes me to change my vote on this measure, and I would be more affirmative.
Okay. Any other discussion about the reliability or the validity testing and results? Okay. So then we would move to usability, and we didn't, I mean, basically in the preliminary evaluations, everyone thought that this would be a meet our criteria for usability. Any disagreement or new issues that should be brought forward? Okay. And then feasibility. Again, on the feasibility, that was rated consistently at the high level. And so I'll just ask if there's any new issues or concerns that anyone would like to raise in terms of the feasibility of this measure. Okay. So the preliminary assessment then of whether this measure was suitable for endorsement was generally yes, but the one no, and I think that was probably related to the concerns about reliability and validity that seem to be resolved, but I'll ask if that's the case.
Yes, I was that vote, Jerry, and I'm changing the vote to yes.
Okay. All right. Are there any other issues that we need to address before we move forward?
Karen, just to describe for us where this measure goes now, how we will do final voting.
Good question. So what we are wanting to do on these focus calls is to really go through each of these measures and see if there are any additions or changes to those preliminary evaluations. And what we will do then, the idea is that these final kind of evaluations will be compiled for the full steering committee. The full steering committee, including you all, will need to do a final vote on these measures. but generally, the fact that you know that you've said that this is suitable for endorsement, I mean, that's what the steering committee wanted, was the kind of recommendations from these work groups. And then we'll set up a process for the full committee to weigh in or bring up any other issues that might not have been addressed. And the idea would be that we will summarize these work group results, get those out to the full committee, have them do a voting online, and then we will have the full steering committee call where we can just, again, just deal with any problems or issues that arose during that voting. So,
Karen, do you anticipate sending the vote out in groups, for instance, after we're done today, assuming we get through six?
We're open to suggestions about that. And we can maybe talk more with you and Christine about that offline or at the end of the call if we have some time, if people have some suggestions of what would be most efficient for everyone. We're certainly open to all ears about that.
Well, just off the top of my head, it seems maybe it's easier to do it in bite-sized chunks than all at once.
Yeah,
a committee has finished its considerations and is ready to make recommendations on a set of measures. Maybe
right.
We should go ahead, you know.
Okay. All right.
This is Jeff Burns. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Uh-huh.
Just a question, since I don't have I'm not able to flip back to the beginning of the measure. For home hemodialysis patients, would they be included or excluded in this measure, because many of those will dialyze intentionally with a permanent catheter.
Right. They are not excluded.
From maintenance hemodialysis, so that would include in-center hemo patients as well as home hemo patients, and I wonder then whether the home hemo patients should be excluded from the denominator.
But is the use of a catheter indicated simply because it's home hemodialysis? I guess that would be the question.
No. Some of the patients prefer to dialyze with a catheter, and my understanding is that when it's the patient using the catheter, that the infection and inflammation risks are very different than when a patient dialyzes with a catheter in center. So it's not very many patients, so that it's not going to probably influence the denominator very much. But for facilities that have large numbers of home hemo patients, it will. And since they may intentionally, or some of their patients may dialyze chronically with a catheter, I think we need to be thoughtful about that and perhaps consider having those excluded from the denominator.
Can we ask the measure developer how they're doing this, whether home hemo patients are excluded?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I was from what I can read in here, they're not excluded. But
in practice, maybe they really mean in-center hemodialysis. Are they on the call?
Right, but I think that, yes, let's first clarify, and I think that actually was a recommendation from the last process, was to include home hemodialysis patients in any measure for which it was appropriate. So someone from CMS or ARBOR?
Yeah, this is Joe Masana from KEC. Home hemodialysis patients are included, based on my understanding and what we've put in the NQF form. If you've got specific recommendations about whether that's correct or incorrect, certainly we're listening.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that they should probably be excluded or have a similar measure with and without. Again, for most units, most facilities, it will not make a difference, but there are facilities, and hopefully there'll be more of them, who have a relatively significant fraction of patients on home hemodialysis, and they will look like a poorer performer than they are when it may be for a different reason than most.
Right. But do we have any evidence that says catheters are appropriate for home hemodialysis or recommendations? I guess I understand you're saying that they may have more catheters. The real question is, should they have more catheters?
I'm not an expert in home hemodialysis. I can consult with them if that would help, but that's my understanding, is that the need to use a non-catheter access is much less important in a home hemo population.
This is Connie, and we have a large home hemo population. And in those patients that are dialyzing 6 or 7 days a week on daily dialysis, some of them opt for catheters, but I will honestly say that the catheter infection rate does still occur. And so, you know, I wax and wane on this one, in particular from the patient's perspective. If they're doing daily dialysis, catheters are much more convenient than a fistula and or a graft.
This is Peter Chris. I would suggest that catheters, while making home hemodialysis possible for some patients, are still less preferable than a non-catheter access. But maybe one way to handle this would be to have the reports made where the hemo patients are broken out into a subcategory. So you'd have an overall facility rating, but then you could also see, what percentage of that is due to patients on home dialysis. Is that doable?
Let me make another suggestion. That is that the value of the measure, and I think it's a valuable measure, will not be lost at all for 95 or 99% of facilities if home hemo patients are excluded. So that it will retain its value
given the fact that such a minority of patients are on home hemodialysis without muddying the waters any.
Yeah, but if we're back to the primary question is not whether they have catheters, but whether they should have catheters.
Well, that's an individual patient decision. You know, if having a catheter permits a patient to be on home dialysis, the good may outweigh the bad. I don't think we can legislate that.
I don't think we're ready for a performance measure for home hemodialysis patients. I don't know that the data is so clear yet that catheters are so inferior to a graft or a fistula in terms of long-term outcomes and patient safety and infection. And you know, there may be a little higher infection risk, but a better compliance and so forth. So.
Okay.
So then are you proposing that we recommend to the developed measure to exclude home hemodialysis patients?
That would be my recommendation.
So, Karen, how do we proceed? Then we vote on it as it is, and then if it doesn't carry, then we vote on it with this adjustment.
Right. We would have to, I guess the first question is, do you think that there's any evidence or data that exists that could help answer the question?
I don't think that there is enough evidence available because there's so few home hemodialysis programs and so few patients on home hemodialysis. I honestly believe that it isn't going to change the measure to exclude them.
Okay. Is there anyone, any of the committee members that are think that home hemodialysis patients should be included in the measure?
Do you just jump in here?
Yes, please.
This is Harvey, and I really don't think it would matter one way or another because the numbers are so few. Northwest Kidney Centers are probably the largest, and I mean, do you have an idea how many use catheters? I know some centers won't even let people go home with catheters. So I don't think it really changes anything, and I'm not sure that excluding them one way or another are going to change the numbers to any.
Right. I agree with you, Harvey. This is Connie from the Northwest Kidney Centers, and I think the numbers are going to be so small to include them or exclude them, it's really not an issue. I'm perfectly comfortable with the measure the way it's written because I think the subset data of the home patients is so small and there's so very little evidence on home out there that it will make that much of a difference.
I don't think it would really. I from what I've observed, and I think there may be some studies out there, but I don't know how large they would be. But it seems that catheters in home patients don't have the infection rates of in-center. But that I may be incorrect on that. But you only have to have one person that a mess up in a center, and you know it's going to affect you. Where at home, the people that are responsible are only taking care of you. So.
So let's ask the measure developer if they know they would have any data on the home dialysis patients. And well, let me stop that for a second. So I guess what we should do is find out then from the work group members on the call, the committee members on the call, whether they want to proceed with the measure as is or suggest that home dialysis patients be excluded. So that's what I'm trying to get.
Liz, you want to do a quick poll?
Okay.
I'm kind of in favor now of letting it go as it is. Let's ask how many on the call, are there any on the call who are still would hold out for not passing it as it is?
This is Jeff. I would prefer that it be removed, but it's just one vote.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. So I think we can make a note of our concerns about that, but move on from there.
You know, there may be data from the FHN that looks at this. I know there's data on events related to vascular access, but it wasn't a huge number of patients, the total number of patients studied. And but I remember being surprised at what a large percentage did use catheters, but I don't know if the infection rate has been looked at, but that's one possible source of information.
Okay, so we will definitely note in the discussion the question that arose about home hemodialysis patients, and, you know, it's something that may come up in the comment period that, may come back to the committee again if there's additional data or discussion about that. Okay, so let's move on to 0257, which is another CMS measure that's up for endorsement maintenance, and this one is the percentage of patients on maintenance hemodialysis during the last treatment of the month using the AV fistula with two needles. And this is a facility level measure, and again, I think we can skip the discussion of high impact. The opportunity for improvement, the performance gap, the preliminary ratings from the work group were three high and one moderate, so it seemed there was agreement that there was room for improvement. And I will just stop there and see if there's any questions or concerns about this measure in terms of performance gap.
This is Connie, and this is another one where, in my notes, it's exclusive to AVFs, and AVGs aren't included. Even though we know AVF is the gold standard, there are many patients who can't have AVFs, and so I think we need to look at the measure to also include a permanent access minus catheters so that AVGs could be included.
Right, and that's a good point because that was something that came up about the measure that you did evaluate at the meeting and actually had stopped evaluating based on that issue, and or that was one of the issues. There were several, but that about the permanent graft. So other discussion about that?
This is Jerry. I was the one that had brought that up on measure 0251,
yes,
which is the percentage of patients with fistula with two needles and or alternatively having been seen by a surgeon for fistula consideration within the past year. And my concern was not that grafts are as good as fistulas, we know they're not, but that there was an additional burden on the system to force patients with a working graft to go see a surgeon every year and every year have the same said that if the graft's working, we don't need to do a secondary fistula as yet.
In the context of that measure that included the being evaluated every year.
Yeah, so the nephrologist, especially with any interventional facility, access either through radiology or nephrology, could make that assessment of whether it was time to move towards a secondary fistula without mandating an actual visit to a surgeon's office once a year. I think the idea of this measure fits more with fistula first, which is the gold standard of getting up to at least 67% prevalence and beyond, hopefully, like in Europe, because it has been shown to have such better outcomes. I think we're talking about two kind of different points of view on the two measures.
Right. I think that's an important distinction. And Connie, was that you? Do you agree with that, or do you have?
Well, yes, that was me that brought up about the AVGs. Really, the focus is catheters out. Catheters are bad, and let's get rid of catheters. And a permanent access is really considered either an AVF or an AVG. And so I would hate that we just focus on AVFs with two needles when there's a great percentage of patients that do have grafts that dialyze with grafts and are successful with it. So I'd like to ask the measurement developer why they excluded AV grafts.
This is Joe Masana. So in the introductory comments that I made when you all were in Washington, when we were all in Washington, I pointed out that that we think that catheter rate and fistula rate are linked, in that I fully agree that there are some people who are not candidates for fistula and would be better served by having a graft rather than a catheter. And so the idea is minimizing catheters, maximizing fistulas, probably results in the best outcomes for the least cost in terms of grafts being better than catheters for outcomes, but much more costly to maintain. But when this measure was originally written and when we reevaluated it, most of the recommendations, the fistula first and the KDOQI recommendations, were consistent, paralleled this submission. And so we did not include grafts because the current clinical recommendations suggest trying to optimize fistula creation, and that's kind of the national that has been the national approach with fistula first and with the KDOQI guidelines.
Right. So any measure like this doesn't mean that 100%. It does have to be based on, you know, patient factors as well. But I guess if you included grafts in here, then you may be lessening the incentive or priority of fistula. But what did the others on the committee think about this?
This is Peter Crooks. I think that the discussion fistula versus graft has been going on, and that we shouldn't at this point be suggesting a change in focus. I think the goal is 67%, which means that two-thirds fistulas, one-third grafts. I may be wrong. Maybe that one-third would have to include the catheters also. But also, you know, in a facility, if you look at the total patients, you know, a certain percentage have fistulas and a certain percentage have catheters, then you know the rest have to have grafts also. But basically, I'm in favor of not trying to change this at this point and try to include grafts and keep it consistent with all the national work that's been done on fistula first.
And this is Jerry, just echoing that, assuming that 0256, the one that we previously talked about today.
You're breaking up, Jerry.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
But assuming both the larger committee endorses and goes through the whole process of endorsement of both of these measures, then you'd have one measure that stated the long-term catheter use and another the fistula use, and then you could assume the difference would be grafts or nearly so.
Okay. Other comments from the steering committee? Connie, do you want to say anything else, or?
No.
Okay.
I'm fine with it.
Okay. So this one also on scientific acceptability of measure properties, I don't think the initial preliminary evals reflected it, but this also had the question about the reliability and the developer did provide additional reliability information on this one in that supplemental document on page 25. So I don't know if there are any other comments or issues, questions about either reliability or validity that the committee wants to bring up or question. Okay. And then on usability, the preliminary evals were pretty consistent. No questions were preliminary evals were all rated high. So I'll just see if there is any additional questions or new issues that anyone would want to raise.
Karen, this is Peter again. I need to back up to scientific acceptability.
Okay. All right.
Alan Kleiger had sent in an email with, I think, a really good point. He wasn't able to make the call today. He had 2 points, and one of them was that there are a significant number of patients who are doing that are stuck with single needle dialysis. There are machines, devices that alternate blood flow, and in some patients that's the best you're going to do. And he thought it might be good to change the description to be, and I don't have his email up here, right? He had a specific wording he had suggested.
He said changing the definition to one needle, to two needles or a single needle device.
Right, and which is a minor change and I think would be an improvement. His other suggestion, I'm getting his email out now, is...
I think the other suggestion was specifically related to that evaluation by a qualified
nephrologist.
Right.
And that would be for the next measure, I guess, not this one. Right,
right.
Okay. All right. So I agree with Alan's suggestion, and I would, you know, probably not vote for it based on that, but I think it would be something to measure. We could recommend a measured developer. I don't think they'd have to resubmit it, Karen, if they just wanted to make that minor change.
Mm-hmm.
Or can the developer comment on that? Is that acceptable, or you have to think about it?
Well, this is Joe Masson. I don't want to comment for CMS. I don't think I'm able to, but we certainly would take any recommendations for improvement back to them and see what Tom and others at CMS would say about that and what the data availability is based on the specifications that are out there.
Okay, so my position, I would pass it, assuming usability and feasibility are also okay, with the recommendation that these look at, including those patients also.
Okay. Other comments from the committee about the single needle device and whether that's...
This is Jerry. I think just to raise an unintended consequence, if you just state it as a single needle and not include with use of a single needle device, there's a fairly common practice in fistulas that are marginal at best, you put one needle in and return to a catheter. And so if you just define it as one needle,
I think it was specifically the whole terminology, single needle device.
Okay, isn't it?
Right. That's specified in Alan's suggestion.
Okay.
Is that common terminology, or does it need to be... Further.
What they mean, I think. It distinguishes it from the situation that Jerry was talking
about. Okay. All right. Are there any disagreements with that recommendation? Okay. So it sounds like the recommendation is that the measure is suitable for endorsement, but the preference would be to... have to add or with a single needle device, and we will have to get a response from CMS about that. Okay. Then let's move on to 0262. This is catheter vascular access and evaluation by a vascular surgeon for permanent access. And this is the percentage of patients age 18 and older with a diagnosis of ESRD with a catheter after 90 days on hemodialysis who are seen or evaluated by a vascular surgeon or other surgeon qualified in the area of vascular access at least once during the 12-month period. This would be, and this is a measure submitted for endorsement maintenance, a measure by the Kidney Care Quality Alliance, and probably the companion measure. This is a clinician-level measure versus facility-level measure and would be the companion measure to the 0251 that you all were referring to earlier that the committee reviewed at the steering committee meeting but stopped review pending because of the issues that we've just talked about. And we did get some response from KCQA about that 0251, which I assume would also apply to 0262. So let me just, again, I think we'll can stipulate that impact is fine. And on this one, 0262, and we can come back to the discussion about 0251. I was just kind of putting that in context. But on this one, when we look at performance gap, there was some concerns about whether information had been provided on performance gap. And so we probably need to take a look at that in the measure submission, and I think the developer may have clarified that in responses. So let me just check here on 0262. I think what's been a little confusing is that these physician-level measures, the developer also used facility information to get at the physician information, but also did some testing in four nephrology office sites. And I think in the measure submission, I don't know, Lauren, if you can bring that one up under 1B2. On page 5, it said physician office, in the middle of the page, it said physician office performance was calculated for those four physician practices, and then it said a mean facility performance rate of 18% that probably was supposed to mean physician
performance. Yes, Karen, I'm sorry, that's an error.
Okay, that's Lisa from KCQA. But one of the questions that the initial reviewers brought up is in the same document where they looked at the facility, it says the mean performance for facilities was 69.3%. So I guess there was a question raised about why the big discrepancy there. So let me just first ask Lisa. It's not the same. The physicians were not necessarily from the facilities where you gave that facility rate?
No, they were not. In fact, we tested with the AMA PCPI, and they had already had four physician offices that they were going into. So we used those same offices. They were not part of the facility sample as well.
Okay. So I'll stop there and just ask the committee to see if they have any questions or any thoughts about that on the performance at the clinician level, the physician level.
Can I clarify with the developer when this information was extracted? If I'm looking at page 5, is it really the data from July 1 of 07 to June 30 of 08? Is that the data that reflects the percent, the 18% versus the 69%?
No, our evaluation, our field testing started on September 1st of 2008 and went through August 31st of 2009. So that's where all of the data is collected from.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I thought I got kicked off the call, sorry.
Committee members or that rated this low or insufficient, what is your thinking now? It's, you know, minimal information from clinician offices, go ahead.
Karen, I'm sorry. We also wanted to point out the reason that we tested within the facilities is that this measure has been, CMS has indicated that it's planning on including it in its Crown Web, and CMS has indicated that that is how it will collect the information. So we thought it best to test it in that manner, which is why we went through the facilities. And we note that information obtained in the facilities can be linked through an attending nephrologist data field.
Okay, so
I guess
we know that CMS is mandated to do performance measures for the facility. Is anyone from CMS on? So you're saying that they're also going to
compute
physician level scores?
Right. We have the two vascular access physician level measures were included in the CMS list of CPMs that was released in April of 2008. And they have indicated to us since then that they still intend to include them.
This is Connie again. My concern with this is that you will be relying on the surgeon or the vascular access individual to provide you with the data, and then you're going to have to be entering that into Crown Web at the facility level, because that's going to be if that's the source that they're going to use for data. And I think that really has a potential for lots of inaccuracies.
It doesn't require information to be provided by the vascular surgeon per se. There can be a note from the nephrologist or even a note from the facility indicating that the patient was seen and evaluated by a qualified vascular surgeon.
Well, I'm not sure that the facilities are really going to know that they've been evaluated unless they do get something from the surgeon and or the nephrologist. So I just feel it puts a real undue burden on facilities to try and, A, track the information, and, B, it is not a field in Crown Web right now. And so I just have some significant concerns about getting the information and then having to manually enter it versus download it directly through an EMR.
So I think those are good questions that we need to address. Before we get to that specifically, can I just check to see if there were any other concerns about performance gap? I mean, does the committee generally agree that tend to agree with in terms of a performance gap for this measure? So that's the first question. And then we can certainly get into the specifics about the specifications and certainly the feasibility of whether that data are going to be in Crown Web. So
this is Peter Crooks. I have some – I'm not convinced either about the performance gap, you know, and what we're trying – what's trying to be measured here is very granular process stuff and, you know, a physician, you know, and patient make decisions about things based on a number of factors, and to – to endorse this without knowing that, that physicians really aren't doing their job, well, bothers me. I think on a one-on-one level, patients and physicians generally try to do, you know, provide the best vascular access for their patients, and they do respond to pressures within the medical care system, but you know, without really knowing there's a gap, it seems like this is going through a lot. It may not be worthwhile.
This is Connie again. I agree, Peter. I think that's well said. I'm not sure I see a gap. In particular, when you look at the facility level data, clearly it shows that people are being evaluated for permanent vascular access and having them placed, and whether or not the physician office data at 18%, is it lack of documentation or lack of the fact that the individual wasn't seen by a vascular access person? So I'm not sure there is a performance gap. I don't know that we know that from the data that's presented here.
I agree.
Okay. So it sounds like we need to and one of the things that let me just, because this may bring up a process of what we need to do, it's a bit difficult to do this voting on the call. So if there, as we go through any of these measures, if there are kind of additional questions and discussion that kind of leads us to the direction maybe we need to have you re-vote on it, we may suggest that we do that right after the call, we would get something out to you after this call for you to weigh in on that. But I just want to see what the if there's any other thoughts about performance gap. Someone preliminarily thought that there was a high level of performance gap, so maybe ask if that person wants to weigh in on this discussion.
Is that person me?
I'm not sure. I don't have that in front of me.
Maybe I'm a little bit confused here. Are we saying the performance gap is the number of patients that aren't being evaluated for a AVF over a 12-month period if they still have a catheter? Is that what we're saying?
The numerator would be patients who are seen or evaluated by a vascular surgeon or other qualified surgeon, and that's out of the patients who are on catheters for greater than 90 days. And that's
okay. Well, I guess is the concern here by what the others have said is that they don't have a AV fistula, or they're not being seen, or that the data's not there to determine whether or not they've been seen. I guess I'm a little confused on that. Maybe I didn't state that as well as I could have either.
Peter, do you want to respond? I think what you're saying is that it's hard to determine from what we've seen whether it's a, or maybe Connie said this, whether it's a lack of documentation or a lack of being evaluated.
Yeah, my point was that that I'm not convinced that they've demonstrated a performance gap. And that's one of our criteria, that they have to show there's a performance gap. And
Karen, may I interrupt? Can I ask, in the facility data, we do the performance range from 0% to 99%, and the mean performance was 69.3%. So to me, that seems to demonstrate a pretty significant gap, and I'm not quite clear on where the concern is. Same in the physician's offices, a mean performance rate of only 18% says that there's significant room for improvement on this measure. In addition, as far as the documentation goes, technically, yet we, if you are not documenting that the patient is seen, that adds a problem in and of itself. The facilities and the physicians need to be documenting that these patients have been seen and evaluated by a vascular surgeon for permanent access. And so we did that we did exclude patients who did not have proper documentation, but we think that that is appropriate.
Here, this is Connie again. Here's my concern. This is a clinician-level measure, and it really is in terms of the relationship between the nephrologist and their vascular access people. And but you're evaluating and the performance based on the facility data, which is not what the measure is. The measure is really at the clinician level, has the patient been seen? The other flaw with this is that there are patients that have been seen, evaluated, and documented, and it's not part of the exclusion that these are permanent access nevers. They will always have catheters. And so I just feel that the way it's written, I'm not sure that there is a demonstrated performance gap.
Okay. We need to I know, move on to some other measures, but so, and I think this is one that we will want to have you all, you know, register on after this call, but I just want to make, point out that, you know, so there could be a performance gap. It may not be specifically about this measure, and then we have to deal with the reliability and validity of the measure as specified. Obviously, with these endorsement maintenance measures, we first ask for information about the measure as specified. This particular measure did not yet get implemented, so there's not going to be a lot of data on the measure as specified, and Lisa, this measure specifications have actually changed from the original endorsement, isn't that correct? Because it was originally specified to use CPT 2 coding on physician forms, is that on claim?
Yeah,
forms?
No, that's not correct. We included CPT 2 codes, just we did not test it that way, we just included them and said that it could be used that way as well. It was not tested in that manner.
Right, right. Okay. Okay. So let's just, is there any questions about the reliability and validity information that was provided? The initial preliminary evaluations were kind of across the board in terms of high to insufficient information, and it looks like the validity information as well. So perhaps we could have a little discussion of what the concerns or questions were.
This is Peter Crooks. I just wanted to just step back for a second, and I am reassured somewhat on performance gap by the information we were given. So I just wanted to say that.
Okay.
And then we were hearing some concerns about, is it really validity, Karen, or feasibility about the issue of really capturing the data because it has to be translated from a chart and put in. It does seem to me that, again, from what the evaluator, I mean, the measure sponsors are saying, physicians and would be incentivized to make sure that this data is entered, because are they going to be dinged if it's not entered, or are they just removed from the denominator?
Sorry, are you asking me that?
Yeah.
If
it's a documentation.
Not entered,
yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry, if it's not entered, if you have a patient with a catheter who was seen but it's not documented, then the physician would be held accountable for that. They would not
right,
credit
right.
for that patient. The other thing we wanted to add is we can't speak for CMS as to how they intend to incorporate these data elements into Crown Web. We doubt that they intend to go back and require a chart review, but we can't speak to exactly how they intend to do that. We do know Crown Web is obviously a very sophisticated instrument, and that it would probably be folly to presume that that this is will be a problem with feasibility.
And Karen, for specifications, Alan Kleiger had made the suggestion that we include interventional nephrologists as being equivalent to seeing a vascular surgeon.
Right.
Yeah, we responded to that with the previous measure that you guys had evaluated. The current specifications read vascular surgeon or other qualified surgeon. The steering committee previously noted that interventional radiologists would be excluded under this current construct. And we acknowledge that interventional radiologists are qualified, so we agreed to amend the numerator statement to evaluation by a vascular surgeon, other qualified surgeon, or interventional radiologist.
Okay,
and the addition that Alan is suggesting is that there are qualified
interventional nephrologist.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Right. They do essentially what an interventional radiologist does.
Right. I don't think that'll be an issue. I can take that back to my my committee. I think that would be fine.
Okay. So, in the interest of time and getting on to the other measures, is there any other discussion about reliability and validity? And then, of course, so that's of the measure as specified, reliability and validity. And then, you know, certainly we can note the question about the data elements are not currently in Crown Web. Are there, and as I said, we will have the work group reevaluate this measure so that we make sure that we capture everyone's current thinking on this. But any other pros and cons to raise for the work group and steering committee's consideration?
It may be overly nitpicking, but I'm not sure there's data that links just being seen by the surgeon with decreasing catheter prevalence and increasing fistula prevalence. Did anyone else share that concern?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, as I'm thinking about this, this is Jeff Burns. The goal here is to have a permanent AV access in place, and we already have performance measures assessing that. You know, there is data comes from Michael Alon's group that even under the very best of circumstances, dedicated nurse practitioners and databases and extraordinary efforts to get patients to get access, a lot of patients just don't do it, despite the best efforts by the dialysis unit and the clinicians and nurses involved. They had 50% of patients at a year who had been referred for access still didn't have a permanent AV access in place for a whole bunch of different reasons. So, you know, on the one hand, the facility would look good in that they had made a referral, so they'd look good on this measure, but they hadn't accomplished the goal, which was to get the catheter out. So I'm not sure that this measure really gets at the heart of the matter sufficiently to be worth what sounds like a lot of effort to get the data.
I also want to clarify that more than just a referral is required for this measure, that it actually does require that the patient be seen and physically evaluated.
Yeah, I mean, not all of what I said still applies. You know, you can be seen by a surgeon and never get the, and there's a lot of patients who are seen by the surgeon or somebody and never get an access place for a whole variety of reasons, despite
you know, again, the unit would have done the right thing, but it didn't accomplish the goal, and we have other measures in place that assess the goal.
Okay, so we will get something back out to you to give us your best evaluation of this measure so that we can actually have some time for the rest of the measures, unless there's any additional comments on that one. We'll move on to the patient education measures. Is any other final comments? Okay. Lauren, you want to?
Okay. So moving on to the patient education and quality of life measures. I did send out an email yesterday, just kind of overarching issue pertaining to all three of the measures relating to some discussions that came up during the in-person meeting as it relates to some of these measures being possibly addressed under the conditions for coverage. And I won't go into all the details of that email, but if you do have it handy, that might be good to pull up now during the discussion. We started with 0324 at the meeting, and I think we kind of got maybe halfway through that measure before we had to stop. So I think I'm just going to pick up there, and maybe we can just kind of start over again fresh with this measure. So, again, as Karen said, we will kind of skip over the high-impact question and move right into the performance gap, opportunities for improvement. It looks like there was on this measure some variability in terms of the reviewer's initial review, that we had a couple of high ratings and one low and one moderate. So if I could maybe just maybe ask.
But could we, we're starting with 0324, right, Lauren?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so this one, the steering committee did vote on importance to measure and report. I guess the question is whether the work group wants to rediscuss that or pick up where the steering committee voting left off, which I think was at...
I think it was scientific acceptability.
Right. I don't think we... Yes, I think they voted on reliability, but we hadn't yet gotten to validity. So maybe we can, you know, we can go either way, but I just wanted to see if what this work group thought would be preferable to them. Do you want to go back and talk about importance to measure and report again, or pick up where the steering committee voting left off?
And the other thing, too, just to think about, too, is that as we look at this measure, which is the facility level measure, that we should also kind of keep in mind the next measure, which is at the physician level. And if we want to try to maybe approach both measures at once or look at the two separately, they're essentially the same measure except for the level of analyses.
Right. And so I think... I mean, we could go through the one measure and then, you know, just see if there were any distinctive differences. Let me just check with Lisa. Lisa, they're essentially the same specifications, and the only difference is the level of analysis. Is that correct?
That's correct. And during the meeting, I believe the steering committee was going through them together, if that helps you at all.
Right.
This is Peter. I think we don't need to review importance to measure and report, unless one of the reviewers wants to, or one of our committee wants to do that.
Well,
this
is Connie, and once again, this is a measure that in the new conditions for coverage is a requirement, and so I view this that the facilities are obligated to do patient education, and so I have concerns that we're looking at this as an NQF measure for endorsement since it's already been under the purview of the CMS surveyors and performance at the facility level is being evaluated.
I agree. I think we agreed. The issue is important. No one's in favor of patients being ignorant about this. The question is how well this measure would address this issue, and also how it would advance things since it's already a condition of coverage. And we did vote on, there was a vote on the level of evidence, which was low, but then there was a question as to whether we should proceed because the detriment to the patient was so minimal. But I would like to ask one question. If this were voted into place, it could potentially make a more meaningful measure, educational measure, less likely. And, I think that actually is an adverse outcome on the patients.
If I may speak to that, the KCQA steering committee actually felt that this measure was quite important because the surveys that are going on in the facilities right now, they felt weren't sufficient to address this issue. And in fact, the GAO has indicated that the surveys are falling short. CMS currently has a policy that the time interval between surveys at any one specific facility should be no more than 3.5 years, but the states obviously have various levels of success in meeting that target. In 2009, a total of 19 states were unable to meet the survey interval of 3.5 years for 100% of their facilities, and that Medicare data indicates that as of October 2010, almost 1 in 10 facilities hadn't had a top-to-bottom check in at least 5 years, and about 250 facilities hadn't had a full recertification inspection in 7 years or more. So it's clear that the surveys aren't getting to this issue, and it's not going to be good enough to ensure that the education is occurring on a yearly basis.
I guess what I was saying was you could pass this measure and still not really be doing much to educate your patients. I don't think I guess I would like to actually looked more at how much the patients understand, some measure that the patients have some comprehension.
Right.
I'm just, there's nothing wrong with this, but it just, there's some sorts of measures that NQF endorses. If they can be implemented at a different pace if there's no existing measure in that area. Isn't that correct?
Well, we have a category for time-limited endorsement of measures if they hadn't been tested. This measure was originally endorsed as a time-limited endorsed measure, and then they submitted their testing data, which is also in the submission form that you have. The question is, whether this should be recommended for continued endorsement based on our criteria. And I think, certainly the question of things that are mandated in regulation and whether that should be a performance measure is worth questioning. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's no benefit in having a performance measure that actually makes that kind of information accessible. And surveys really aren't happening on a regular basis, or if surveys are mostly based on a sample, and I'm not sure in the dialysis facility world, then, there could be a reason to still have a performance measure. But that's also based on if a performance measure meets our criteria. So,
This is Peter Cooks. I would just say I agree that I think this is complementary to the fact that it's a condition for coverage and there is inspection. But in California, we have units that have gone 10 years without an inspection. And so I think this is a complementary. That's assuming that it does what it says it can do,
right.
But if it did, I don't have any problem with the concept that this is also a condition of coverage. It's complementary to that, I believe.
And in addition, NQF has no similar measure at this point in time. And as far as I know, there is no measures in the works addressing whether or not a patient understands what has been taught to them. So that I don't believe that's a solid reason to negate this measure, because a measure may come down.
So, well, that's, you know, so the real question is whether this measure, as it's specified, meets the NQF criteria. And, you know, it really did not pass evidence, but the committee thought that an education measure could meet the exception to having empirical evidence, because there would be no detriment to the patient. Where we're at, and which is where I think we should pick up, or you know, we can have you rethink that if you like. But then the question is really, is this measure as specified reliable? And probably, I think the heart of the question that you all are raising, is it really a valid indicator of quality? Is it really going to tell you what you're hoping to know, or driving improvement in the area that you want? And I think that's what some of the comments are about. So do you want to go back to the evidence question, or do you want to pick up with reliability and validity of this measure as it's specified?
Well, I think the reliability and validity issue may come down to kind of the checkbox nature of this. If this is the checkbox in Crown Web, you know, that doesn't, does that correlate to the patient really getting some true education or not? Is that some of the concern that was expressed?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess a question, too, and I don't know if Lisa knows this or someone from CMS, is this a data element in Crown Web?
Again, Karen, this was included in their list. They have since indicated that they are very interested and still interested in including this in upcoming versions of Crown Web. We have no indication that this is not intended as a checkbox measure, and I think that it's dangerous to presume that that's what CMS will collect, again, because Crown Web is highly sophisticated. It's inappropriate to assume that this is just going to be a checkbox measure.
But currently, there's nothing in Crown Web where this could actually be computed. So the only way we could endorse this measure is as a medical record measure, because there isn't anything in Crown Web.
But they have indicated that they will be building that data element in.
Okay.
Well, then, if we have to evaluate on its current data collection method, did we hear a description of that? Then how do we get 100% of patients? Is it just a sample, or how you propose to go about it?
Well, the data collection would be what was specified in terms of the details about the numerator and denominator. Let's see if we can, in 0324. Because we don't have any Crown Web data elements, so those are not in there. So let me just see what was submitted.
Electronic.
So they provided some specific information in 2A1.3 on page 9 about how, and this is how they tested the measure, by doing medical record review abstraction. Do you have that up, Lauren? Yeah.
Yes, it's up.
Okay. So so they have those details about what's required to meet the numerator conditions, and then the denominator is probably pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So if you look at those numerator details, that's basically how the measure was tested, and that we don't have any Crown Web data elements that go with that to say that it would be any different. We just don't know. So, I mean.
So, well, so Ken, we're being asked to consider endorsing a measure that doesn't have, well, either the data has to be extracted from charts in a very labor-intensive process, which hasn't really been tested except to do some limited validity and feasibility testing, and or the data will be collected possibly from Crown Web in the future. It from a feasibility, and I know this is probably more point four, but I'm not sure it sounds that we should be endorsing it when there's that. We're not sure if the data can be collected and or if it will ever be electronic, and even if so, it hasn't been tested.
Well, it's been tested, in a sample, and that's currently all our criteria require is that there be reliability and validity testing, and it can be done on a sample. NQF does endorse measures that are specified for medical records, hopefully in the future some of those will be converted to measures that can be extracted from electronic health records. Or in this case, the goal would be that eventually this would be available in the Crown Web data. So I'm just saying that so it's not that we can't endorse it. I think what you're speaking to is the likelihood that a medical record abstraction data measure would be widely implemented, but I can't answer that. NQF is not the implementers. It doesn't prohibit us from endorsing a measure, but I think it's a point.
It speaks to feasibility. Is this ever going to be used by anybody in its current form? Other than a few.
We have received indication from CMS that it will be used in Crown Web. So, yes, it, at this point in time, we can say that it's very likely that it will be widely used.
Although, if you look at the description in the numerator details, it really is just a checkbox. Did the patient receive education? Yes. If yes, which type of modality was discussed? It's not anything about the quality or it's a checkbox. Yes, no.
This is designed. It was designed to reflect the current and is consistent with the CFCs. At this point in time, we're making sure that the facilities and the physicians are educating their patients on all available modalities as is required in the CFCs. This measure does not specifically look at whether or not the patient understood and so on. But we're confirming that the conditions for coverage are being met.
Okay. So, I think these are measures that we also will have to have you, rate and vote on after we finish our discussion. But let's continue to see if there are the pros and cons in terms of making sure that all of the information relevant to evaluating this measure is available and has been discussed. So any suggestions for those who
since this was a 0324 was a facility level in the reliability testing, I guess I'm curious from the developer why the physician office testing on page.
I think, let me just say that they put the facility and the physician office level testing in both measures, even though one measure is facility and one is physician.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that that's just how we completed the forms. The physician office obviously refers only to the physician level and the facility to both.
But are you proposing as well that the physician level measure would also be eventually coming from Crown Web data? Are you maintaining that that would still be done through physician record?
Again, CMS has indicated that it does intend to collect the physician level measure through Crown Web.
Okay. And is Tom Dudley on the line by any chance, or anyone else from CMS?
Yes, this is Kim Smith. I believe Tom was involved in these conversations, and I actually just sent a note to our Crown Web team to see if I can confirm whether that will be built into the system, but I don't know the answer to that offhand.
Okay, well, that's something we could also get some more information on if we don't. If you get a response before we end the call, please break in and let us know. That would be good.
Okay, great.
Okay. Any other comments from the committee in terms of positives for either the facility level or physician level measure, or any other issues that you want to have the committee discuss? Okay. And just in terms of, you know, as we said at the outset, these are the facility and physician level measures are basically the same, just a different level of analysis. Are there any different issues or considerations, pros or cons, for physician measure versus facility measure?
I guess I have a little concern, at least in our clinics, which are run by one of the LDOs, you know, there are facility level protocols in place, and in this case, the social worker would primarily be the team member most directly interfacing with the patient on education, and should do that throughout the unit for all patients. The physician will add some additional education during that doctor's rounds. I'm not quite sure how we split that out. You see where I'm going? It's, you know, something is applied across the board by the staff of the dialysis unit. It's going to be a facility level measure, but how will the physician component of that education be documented and split out from the rest of the team interventions?
Lisa, do you want to address that?
When we were going in the facilities, when we did our field test, the facilities actually were documenting who provided the education. In the data that we collected, we did not differentiate that, but we could go back and look at that data and provide you that information if need be.
So is the kind of framework that this is looked at the patient level out of the facility records, but then the physician would score would be based on the same data. It's just that if the physician of record would be attributed the same score as for an individual patient, it would be based on the same information that was going into the facility score. Is that what you're?
Well, I can't say that for sure. Obviously, that's a question of implementation, and it depends on how the measure is implemented and used. So I can't really speak to that.
Okay.
But,
all right.
But I think it seems that at least up to this point in time, you've been taking similar documentation. In other words, you're not looking for documentation that the nephrologist said anything. It's just that there's documentation of modality education. So if that's the case, then I think the a secondary concern, in addition to that you're not really capturing the physician component, is that the conditions for coverage, and let me say it this way, Medicare has put the responsibility for modality education on the dialysis facility and not on the, on the nephrologist. So, so I think nephrologists might, I'm not saying that nephrologists aren't, don't share some responsibilities and shouldn't be doing it, but, you know, nephrologists might feel that, well, this isn't my job. My job, you know, it's the facility's job to do modality education. In order to get paid, they have to do it, they have to document it, and that's their job.
I know that the KCQA committee really disagreed with that. They strongly believe that the physician has a large responsibility, actually the primary responsibility, to educate their patients on available modalities. I'd also like to, just to point out that I just wanted to point out that this is a patient's centered measure. The point of the measure is to strive to fully inform the patients on all available options to them. Again, this is consistent with the CFCs. And I just wanted to see if there was any input from the patients on the steering committee on this measure, if anybody had anything else to add from the patient point of view.
Well, I mean, the only thing I'm really concerned about is what everybody else is concerned about. If it's just a checkbox, I don't see what good that it is. If it's actually being done, I mean, I think it needs to be done, and I think that's the biggest problem with dialysis care today is if you go into the centers, I mean, very few people are either aware or are of all the modalities as far as in the large numbers. I'd say 80 to 90% of the population. The ones that are aware, then they seem to be doing pretty well. But I think the data suggests that, you know, that patients just aren't in the, so I think it's important, but I do have a concern that if it's just a checkbox, that it's really not going to do that much good. And I'm not sure that you can track the data. So, you know,
go ahead, Harvey.
Well, I mean, I think this is a very worthy, measure, but I don't know if it's going to meet the criteria to endorse it. I mean, emotionally, I say yes, but I think, you know, when I hear the concerns, I gotta agree with them.
And I guess this is Connie again. My biggest concern is you have two measures, one at the facility level and one at the physician level. And I just am not sure that you're going to, it's going to improve care or the way the measure is written is going to demonstrate that there is quality. It's just, I just don't think it's ready for prime time yet.
Does the steering committee have any recommendations for KCQA that I could take back to our steering committee? Or
I still have reservations about the importance of breaking up the physician. I know that your committee feels it's the physician's responsibility. I think there is some responsibility by physicians and by the medical director, particularly the medical director of the facility. But I think it's arguable that trying to do a physician-level measure is really going to have an impact. Doing the facility one makes sense, as I said before, because they're assigned responsibility and it's a complementary complementary to the fact that it's a condition for coverage.
Right, but I guess the point is that if it's a team approach, then everyone, it's kind of a shared accountability issue. Whether it's a small portion or a large portion, it's shared accountability.
Well, without evidence, we're kind of shifting responsibility from the facility to the nephrologist. And you know, so...
Yeah,
it feels right to say it's the nephrologist's responsibility to do this, and we all agree that in the best of all worlds that's the case. But Medicare says this is not the nephrologist's responsibility; it's the facility. So we're kind of saying this is a feel good thing to put it to measure at the physician level. It seems right, but I don't think there's a lot to at the end of the day that a lot to think that it's really valid.
It's almost like as long as you have both of them there that's supposed to be doing, you hoping that one of them will. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Gary, I just wanted to go on record that I fully agree that the nephrologist should be heavily involved in patient education. That was not my point. It was just that you have two separate measures, facility staff level people and physician being separated, that it's going to be very, very hard to tease that out. I'm not sure that makes it a very usable or feasible measure if you have to divide it between what the staff of the facility educates the patient about and what the physician educates them about. When I make rounds, I have my social worker standing next to me when we see each patient, and we have a joint discussion. It's hard to tease that apart, and that was my only point.
Well, again, KCQA would be willing to entertain any suggestions that you might have to strengthen this or make it a better measure, in your opinion.
If they want to think about including, you know, some evaluation of comprehension, that would be it's very difficult, and if you have, you know, it'd be great to have some input there.
Agree.
I would agree with that, too. I mean, it's always good to hear what the patient thinks his level of education about the disease is. Because once again, I remember when I was in center and, you know, I'd just check all forms, but my comprehension level was very limited. It probably still is.
Okay. Well, I know we are getting down to the wire with our time here, so we will follow up with you all on those two measures. And, Lauren, you want to give an update on the process measure on the quality of life instrument?
Sure. Well, actually, in terms of content for the measure, we don't have much of an update versus what you last received. However, we have been in communications with RAND, who is the measure steward, and they have agreed to submit some additional information, specifically as it pertains to the opportunity for improvement and the performance gap data. They are also working with, I guess, kind of subcontractors, if you will, Beth Witten and Associates, who helped develop the measure the first time around. And we have also been in talks with them as well, and between the two, RAND being the measure steward and their counterparts, agreed to submit additional information on the measure. So we all agree that an outcome measure would be obviously the preferred measure, but I think in terms of we also all agree this is an important measure and we want to keep it endorsed if possible, so that we will move forward with the process measure for now once we get additional information from them, and then we will forward that to you for your review, and then we may have to convene again once we get more information from the measure steward.
Right. So the first step is actually just getting the information that you can evaluate against the criteria, because we haven't had that. If we do get that, we will definitely have you take a look at it. If we don't, of course, the measure won't go any further, though there is interest in developing a actual measure that's based on the patient-reported physical and mental functioning. So, and the group that Lauren mentioned, Beth Witten and her group, have been working with facilities on collecting this information and may be able to develop something that would be an appropriate patient-reported outcome measure. But we wanted to see if, I know we talked about it briefly at the meeting, and of course, as Connie had pointed out, this is also something that is, it's not specifically mentioned in the regulations, but in the interpretive guidance to the surveyors. But I think the same discussion that you had previously about the potential problems with the survey process, and that doesn't necessarily negate having a measure, but the question is whether the measure as specified really gets to what you're interested in, since it's really just, did you give a quality of life instrument annually? And, you know, the reason that measure got through the last time was it was seen as kind of a start to get down the, to eventually get to some point of having a measure more about the actual information rather than just that process. So I guess if you have any additional thoughts, you can mention them now, and we can, you know, be sure to have that in our mind when we get the information from the developer.
Well, I think that that's, you know, similar concern as you mentioned that, just because the survey is done, what's done with that information, how does it help patients? It's sort of distal to the outcome you'd like, which is that, you know, patients are, quality of life is monitored and improved by the dialysis process in some fashion.
Right.
Karen, the other comment that I would have is I think a better way to look at this measure is the percent of patients in your facility that have below average scores. The KDQOL, as this measure is written, is basically directly out of the FAQs in the conditions for coverage, and it's also on the MAT that it's just the number of patients who have taken the test.
Exactly.
I think more significantly would be a measure that identified how many people had below average scores in the physical and mental, and then look at that as improvement over time, you know, actions that were taken. KDQOL, in our two API meetings, as are dictated by the conditions for coverage, are supposed to be reviewed, and those that are below average and as outliers are supposed to be incorporated into the patient's plan of care.
Right.
So I feel an outcome measure is a much better measure than a process measure, because the process measure is already in place.
Right. And you know, that's definitely the direction that everyone would prefer. So we'll see what more information we can get for you. And as Lauren said, you didn't even really have sufficient information to do anything with, and perhaps we'll see. I mean, you know, just because they provide more information doesn't mean that it's going to meet our criteria or that you think it would be worthwhile to recommend for endorsement. Okay, and I guess, Lauren, we need to...
Before we go to the member and public comments period, I'll just recap really quickly that measures 0256 and 0257 passed with a couple of conditions relating to changing the language and excluding the home hemodialysis patients from 0256. The other measures
I think they didn't. Ultimately did not, we were going to make a comment about that. They did not recommend that that had to happen.
Okay. So then for the other measures, we will take a revote on those. You will receive some instructions from myself. We'll just administer another SurveyMonkey. And then if you could, if you're responsible.
Are you going to survey just the initial reviewers or all the people on the call?
We'll do all the people on this call plus the initial reviewers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if your responses change drastically from the initial survey, then we'll just kind of ask you to clarify or justify perhaps maybe why your responses have changed. So we'll hopefully get that out today or Monday at the latest. So with that, I think that's it. And
well, it says review of competing measures. Are there...
Yeah, obviously we won't have time to get to that either today.
I think what we're going to do is if we'll take on more, we put together a comparison table. we'll look at that more closely, and I think our first step will be to ask the measure developers to come back with a plan for harmonization if it's indicated, versus having to have the steering committee recommend something and then have them reject it. So that might be a more efficient way to deal with harmonization if it's still an issue.
Sounds good.
Yep, and just a quick reminder, our next call will be for the mineral metabolism measures on Monday the 19th from 1 to 3, and that's Eastern Time. If you can attend that call, even if you're not in the primary group, that would be great. And with that, I think we have just enough time to open up the call for the member and public comment period. So, operator, Anthony, if you're there, can you open the public line, please?
Yes, ma'am. All public lines are now open.
And
okay. So anybody, NQF member of public comment? Anyone care to comment? Hearing none, I guess we don't have any additional comments today.
Okay. If you all think of any additional questions that are information that you need, please, or suggestions for us, please let us know. But as Lauren said, we'll get something out to you Monday at the latest on the measures that you know, we think there was sufficient questions and discussion that we need to have you, you know, based on all the information and review of the measures to rate, so that we can provide that information then to the full steering committee for their consideration. Any suggestions for us for process suggestions? All of this is kind of new territory in terms of trying to get through this work, so certainly any suggestions you have are welcome and willing to give
try. I might just say, Karen, I think this wasn't what was actually a pretty good forum, you know, and to you've had subgroups meet before, but I think, you know, having this limited number and a group that's focused on these and have studied them was productive. I think we got to a lot of key issues and aired them out. So just my perspective was it seemed like it was a good process.
I would agree with that as well.
I would echo that too.
Okay, well, thank you. And anything else occurs to you, you know, definitely contact either of us. We're definitely interested. So I appreciate you your comments and your attention to all these issues.
Karen or Lauren, do we have a date for the full committee re-review yet?
Not yet. I'm going to send out something today or Monday. I'm just trying to get a last few minute responses in, and hopefully I'll have a date settled for you today.
But you can kind of, it's going to be, what, mid-October?
Looking at mid-October, possibly the 11th or 13th.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Thank you.
We'll get that to you as quickly as possible, but we'll do that soon.
But the other three committee meetings are set.
Right.
Okay. So when you send out the announcement, Lauren, add in all the, you know, putting the whole schedule of meetings.
Oh, absolutely.
That are upcoming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I would suggest. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you all. Thanks to everyone that participated.